Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
We'll get into the sports stuff and what the governor had to say about sports with no fans in a couple minutes, and Michael Jordan. And the documentary starts on Sunday of this week, which I'm looking forward to. We have a decent sports week coming up. We have The Last Dance, 2 hours of that on Sunday, and then we lead that up to the draft on Thursday and Friday and Saturday, and then The Last Dance again next Sunday. But before we get into all the good sports stuff, let's say good morning to the guys and say good morning to one Chris Canty. Good morning, Chris.
What's up, Dave? How are you doing this morning?
I'm okay. I felt like yesterday I was a little bit down. Today I feel like I'm in a little bit better state of mind.
Okay. So you've gotten past hump day now that we're on the back half of the week.
I think so.
You feel like you're okay.
We're a week out from the draft. I feel like, you know, it's chilly outside, but it's sunny outside, which is always helpful. So I feel like I'm in a pretty good state of mind. And Rick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, Dave. I had a really nice night of sleep. I found a new show I'll tell you guys about later. Some of you guys can maybe dabble in a little bit on Netflix. And no, just trying to get through this week. Looking forward to The Last Dance on Sunday. Going to have to change my schedule a little bit because I can't wait to see it. So I'm going to actually stay up and try to watch as much as I can.
Now, isn't it over by 10 or no?
No, it's 2. It's 8. I believe
it's 9 to 11 or 8 to 10?
No, it starts at 9 and it's so 1 and 2. So I believe it's
9 to 11.
It's gonna be,
okay.
Yeah, 9 to 11.
So that's so 11 o'clock is well past when you would normally stay up till.
Yeah, you're looking at like close to 3. I mean, usually you shut it down around 8, 8:30. So I'll battle through.
That was the kind of show, because I have not, you know, we watched Survivor last night and Alex likes to watch American Idol, but I really think I'm going to make Sunday night family appointment viewing. Like, I think we should watch this show as a family unit, and I should, for me, my life, and I think a lot of people out there should add the flavor of how they dealt with, because I don't, this is not going to be a New York centric show of the pain of what you had to deal with Michael Jordan. So I'm going to watch it with the boys, with Sherry, and I'm going to interject my own personal opinions as we watch the show on Sunday.
And you should. I mean, your kids are going to get a chance to witness some history. Kind of get a, I mean, they didn't get a chance to see Michael Jordan.
No.
They're big basketball fans, so I'm sure they've seen LeBron, and we sit here on the radio. I mean, if we have nothing to talk about, you know, who's greater, Michael Jordan or LeBron James? Carry that for 3 hours. So just remind you know, the younger viewer how great Michael Jordan was.
But I think, Rick, it also gives people an opportunity to go behind the scenes, people that didn't see Jordan play live and understand what it's all about. I mean, when LeBron James said he was talking about chasing ghosts and trying to win as many championships as Jordan and be looked at on that same level, I think now it'll give the younger basketball fans an opportunity to see exactly why everybody looked at Jordan as the standard. Like, one of the promos that's running on our station about The Last Dance is Phil Jackson talking about Jordan setting this standard that everybody wants to look up to now. I think for younger basketball fans, this will be an opportunity to go behind the scenes and see exactly what made Michael Jordan and the 98 Bulls so special.
Well, what's amazing, though, too, is, I mean, you get a chance right now. I mean, you know, growing up, I mean, I couldn't wait to get my first pair of Jordans. Like, I loved Michael Jordan. I think, you know, Be Like Mike was an unbelievable campaign. But, I mean, you're sitting here witnessing greatness, too, with LeBron James. And I was looking at the top 10 dynasties, you know, and going through that in my head. And I couldn't help but, you know, think to myself, why is LeBron James by himself? I know it's a team thing, but, I mean, LeBron James with this 8 straight NBA finals. Do you know how ridiculous that is?
It's ridiculous.
Well, it's insane. 8 straight finals.
You could easily argue that Jordan would have gone to 8 straight NBA finals and maybe won 8 consecutive championships if he didn't decide to play baseball.
Yeah, but he didn't.
Right. You're right.
The reality is he didn't. So, I mean, I get what you're saying, but I think, I mean, the point in saying all that is that if someone, you know, grew up just loving LeBron James and following LeBron James from the time he was in high school to now in his 17th year, you know, leading the league in assists, poised to win another championship, right? You're saying to yourself, how could it get any better than LeBron James? How could you sit here and make a legitimate argument that there's anyone better than LeBron James? I think this is a good way now for, you know, people like that to really truly understand why, when you start having that conversation, the people that got a chance to watch Michael Jordan make the argument that there's no one close to being as good as Michael Jordan is.
Yeah, I think that's a fair argument. And he's one of the, because sometimes athletes don't stand the test of time. You know what I mean? Like you get 20, 25 years out, and all of a sudden they were great, but this guy's better, or this guy's not as great. Like, he has stood the test of time probably better than any athlete I can ever remember. You know, we're such a prisoner of recency and the moment, and he's not the moment, and we still, Chris, discuss him with this reverence and adoration that is really almost unmatched in all of sports, because you can go back and you can look at other greats and you're like, yeah, Magic was great, but, you know, he didn't do this great and he didn't do that great and he lost in the finals. He did this. It feels like there's none of that with Michael Jordan.
Well, there's none of that with Jordan, because you saw the postseason success that Jordan had once he got past those 80s Pistons. I mean, it was championship after championship after championship. And the only time where you weren't talking about Michael Jordan being in the NBA Finals is the 2 years that he walked away from the game and he went and played baseball. And then he came back. And I think that first year they didn't get there. But I mean, listen, we're talking about a guy whose competitive greatness is unmatched. Being at his best when his best was required, and he made his legacy and built his brand by his performance when it mattered the most. And it's a brand that has stood the test of time, Dave. You talk about Michael Jordan not going away and having staying power even past his playing days. It's because everybody recognizes the iconic Jordan brand. Now, it helps that he's also an NBA owner and he's still around basketball, but it's the brand that has allowed him to have this staying power that we're talking about. And you got to think about it, Dave. You really didn't have an athlete that branded themselves as successfully as Michael Jordan at that point. I mean, when you start talking about the late 80s and 90s, as far as sports brands go from an individual player standpoint, there was no one bigger.
No. No, I don't even think there was anybody close. And, Rick, you're a good person to ask, because – as great as Gretzky was, and he was, and as dominant, and the numbers, and the wins, and all those things ring true, it feels like, and maybe I'm wrong, but it feels like Michael Jordan is considered in even a higher class than Wayne Gretzky when you look back at 99.
Well, I think when you look at the sports too, I mean, I think when you if you ask someone in Canada that same question, I mean, there's a reason why Wayne Gretzky's nicknamed the Great One. I mean, what he was able to do is, I mean, just look at his numbers.
They're unbelievable.
You can't even believe it. I mean, this guy's getting 200 points a season, which is insane. Scored 92 in a season. I mean, it's ridiculous. So I just think with Michael Jordan, kind of to speak to Chris's point, I mean, he transcended sports. And, you know, the reason why his brand has stood the test of time is because what it stands for. I mean, Michael Jordan now is synonymous with greatness. So, I mean, if you're a great athlete, I mean, look at the athletes that wear Jordan brand or that are Jordan athletes. Derek Jeter. I mean, now you got Zion. I mean, his brand is more than being an athlete. It's an iconic brand. And if you're lucky enough to be a Jordan athlete, you know, he's recognizing you as, you know, you having the same competitive greatness and also kind of being more than just the sport. Like, what you stand for is more than just, like, what Michael Jordan is and what his brand is more than just basketball. It is. I mean, it's that, you know, that kind of what we talked about with Kobe, leaving behind the mama mentality. I mean, it's, you want to be like Mike. You want to be, I mean, that's greatness. You want to be, you know, in the biggest moment, you know, there's a reason why. You know, one of the arguments for Jordan is he's 6 for 6 in the finals, and they're not even close. I mean, he never.
And he didn't let a game get to game seven.
Yeah.
Didn't let a finals get to game seven.
We all want to believe. I mean, deep down in your heart, you want to believe you have that kind of mentality. You know what I mean? Like, in those moments when your best is required, that you can answer the bell. And that's exactly what he used to do.
Now, I wonder in New York if people are going to have a tougher time with this show, because – and I've told you this in the past, like, I detested Michael Jordan. And I'm not saying I didn't recognize his greatness, because I always did. But, I mean, from the time I was 9, it's almost like his entire being as a basketball player was solely to torture me. Really. Because I'm 9, I'm a Georgetown fan. He hits the shot in the corner to beat the Hoyas 63-62. Then he goes to the Bulls. Now, remember, they were not great right away. It took them a couple of years to get to that level and then push over the top. But then every year, it's we beat the Knicks, we beat the Knicks, we beat the Knicks. It's like, he tortured me so much. So I do wonder, Chris, if the New York viewers starting on Sunday night, and I have to figure the rating is going to be unbelievable, do have a tougher time watching and maybe even enjoying this show than other fans around the country.
Well, I mean, it's going to force Knicks fans to relive some of the nightmares that Michael Jordan and those Bulls teams are responsible for. But Dave, even though you hate Michael Jordan, you have to respect him.
Yeah, but that's two different things.
Yeah, I understand it's two different things, but because you respect him, I think it does provide some entertainment value. It will be an enjoyable watch just from the standpoint of you get to actually see behind the curtain as to what made him tick and what made those 90s Bulls teams go. So, yeah, I think people in New York will be locked and loaded to watch it on Sunday night. I don't think that the fact that he was the guy that was responsible for none of their teams actually having a chance to win a championship, I don't think that will keep people from getting in front of the television to check it out.
Yeah, what makes it worse too, Dave, for us as Knicks fans, is, you know, the teams that we love as Knicks fans, you're sitting here and it seems like every day you pick up the newspaper or, you know, read an article, whatever it is, you get sound on, you know, a sports talk radio show, whatever it is, it's just, you know, the players just systematically destroying those teams that we loved. Oh, Patrick Ewing was he wasn't a real leader. He was all about himself. It's like, come on, man. Like, we need to do that. We need to do that now.
Patrick Ewing was the hardest working player I've ever seen. And this premise that he wasn't a great player and didn't will his team is just, he couldn't get by Michael Jordan and he couldn't get by Hakeem Olajuwon. But, I mean, let's be fair. When you look at Ewing and the talent that was on those teams, as tough as they were, as good as Anthony Mason was and Charles Oakley and Derek Harper and Doc Rivers, he never played with a Scottie Pippen. He never had anybody even close to what Michael Jordan had there. And I'm not saying that Ewing is Michael Jordan by any stretch, but Patrick Ewing never had that second guy, Rick, never even close to what Michael had.
No, you're right, and it's sad. I mean, I there's no reason for it. I mean, you know, Chris keeps going back to the fact, and this is why I know as a sports fan you love this kind of stuff, is, I mean, you want to see what the secret sauce was. You want to see behind the scenes how they made it work. I mean, the fact that Michael Jordan saying it was a trying season, you're like, well, you know, watching it when it happened, you're like, I mean, this team is unbelievable. I mean, this team's going to win a championship. And then you find out there was a lot of trials and tribulations that went along with it. I just think it's sad, man, because, I mean, looking at what Patrick Ewing was able to do and what those teams were able to do, I mean, I get it. They didn't win the ultimate prize, but still, I mean, to now, you know, decide that you want to go after your teammates, that's sad to me, man. I mean, the sanctity of the locker room, man, it's just like some things are better left. Just let them be. Just leave them be.
Yeah, you wish that stuff wouldn't come out. But, I mean, with every team, even championship teams, there's always going to be some friction between players in the locker room. But when you win, a lot of that stuff get swept under the rug, you keep it behind closed doors, and when you lose, people want to point to that being the reason why you lost. But, I mean, Dave, as far as number one overall picks go, I mean, Patrick Ewing lived up to the billing. I don't understand why you know, Charles Oakley would be coming for his neck. I mean, in terms of being able to transform the state of the franchise, Patrick Ewing did that.
The Knicks were what they are now when he went there. I mean, they were the laughing stock of the NBA. They were a nothing short of a joke, and Patrick Ewing, you know, completely transformed that team. Did he transform them the way Isaiah Thomas did with the Pistons? No. Did he transform them the way?
Well, you're saying that because he didn't win the championship. That's really what it comes down to, right?
Yeah, right.
But I mean, they got to an NBA Finals. They didn't finish the drill.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you're right. But that's what it's all about, right? Isn't that what we're all about in sports, especially now, is did you win a championship? I mean, Ernie Banks, who was considered one of the great players of all time, never led his team anywhere in Major League Baseball. And he's considered possibly one of the greatest shortstops in the history of baseball. So I just think that times change. But nowadays, when you look at it and you look back at Patrick Ewing, I don't know. I think of him as having a storied career. To have the negativity draped down on him now, I think is really unfortunate.
Yeah, it doesn't seem fair, Dave. But to go to the playoffs, what, 14 straight years?
Yeah.
14 straight?
And he was a great player. I mean, when you just looked at what he was, the litmus test of you watched him play, he was a great player. He was a terrific scorer. He didn't have much of an offensive game coming into the NBA. He developed an outside shot. He was an excellent rebounder. He was always a great defensive player. Like, he was a great, great player. Was he Michael Jordan? No. But, you know, we start out by saying, who has been? I don't think we have seen Michael Jordan. If Michael Jordan never played in the NBA or played in a different era, Rick, I would guarantee you that Patrick Ewing would have championships.
And you're probably right. But, I mean, you know, I mean, this is, This is you to a T, though, Dave. I mean, how much you love winning. I mean, for you, it's winning above all, right? Like, it take all that other stuff, throw it out the window. You're all about winning and winning championships and then getting naked after you win. But, I mean, you know what winning does. I mean, you know, we as a society, I mean, we romanticize winning. It makes everything better. You overlook so many different things. I mean, why is Tom Brady the greatest of all time now?
Because he has more wins than anybody.
Exactly, right.
He's won more Super Bowls.
Yeah, I mean, so that's really what it comes down to, is Patrick didn't win, and now all of a sudden they want to, you know, because of what happened at the Garden with Charles Oakley and everything else, I mean, he's going scorched earth, and it's not fair to Patrick Ewing, it isn't.
It's really not, because he's never done anything but been a good soldier, Chris. It really bothers me the way that Patrick Ewing has been treated, because he never had that number two guy. He did everything he could. He never complained about things. He tried to carry that team on his back year after year after year. He was a great player. And now, minding his own business, coaching Georgetown, you have to go after him? I think it's really Bush League by Oakley.
Yeah, and it was a low blow by Oakley, saying that's why the Knicks wouldn't give him a job, too, when we know the Knicks have hired so many other former greats. Like, to not have Patrick Ewing over there at the Garden, it does seem a little strange. But listen, Ewing has gone on with his coach's career. He's down at Georgetown. He's doing his thing. I mean, it just seems like it was unnecessary for Charles Oakley to do that. You want to go after James Dolan? Fine. I get it. Now, people are always going to be critical of an owner when you have a perennial loser. But, I mean, going after one of the all-time Knick greats, to me, it just seems like it was something that was out of bounds. Like, it's not something that you do. I mean, you can say what you want about Patrick Ewing. The guy gave you a shot. He got the two NBA finals. Now, I mean, you start talking about wanting a team to be a championship contender. He gave you an opportunity to get to that stage. And so I think that's why a lot of Knicks fans love Patrick. But, I mean, the grit that Charles Oakley brought to the game, we love that too. But, I mean, for Oakley, what he's doing right now is just kind of one of those things where he's desperate for attention. And that's what makes it hard for me to even acknowledge anything the dude is saying, because it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't like it.
I don't think anybody likes it. I don't know how you could possibly like it, Rick. I don't know.
No, you couldn't. I mean, again, I mean, there are some things that are better left, you know, unsaid. I mean, I guess if you want to go back, and then we all do this as players. I mean, Chris was lucky enough to win a championship. I mean, the whole reason you play is to win a championship. And if you're on the cusp, you know, maybe now in retirement, you know, years removed, you start to go through, you know, the different seasons in your head and, you know, why we couldn't get over the hump. But yeah, I mean, keep that to yourself. I mean, this is not the time. Like, let's not pretend like the Knicks gave Patrick Ewing was dying to be a head coach in the NBA. The Knicks didn't just say, hey, Patrick, you know what? Because you're one of the greatest players that ever played for the New York, we're going to give you a head coach. No, they didn't give him a job either. So, I mean, to take shots at Patrick Ewing right now is, I mean, completely out of bounds, in my opinion.
Completely out of bounds. All right, people lined up. Want to talk about the Bulls and the Knicks and how it combines. 800-919-3776. We'll hear from Michael Jordan, who's on Good Morning America earlier today. We'll take a listen to that as well. Let's go to Train in the Truck to lead us off on a Thursday. Good morning, Train.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hope everybody's safe. Dave and Chris, I don't know how you guys deal with Rick. He is so crazy. I just wanted to say I'm 31. I'm 31 years old, and I didn't really get to see Jordan. I really started watching with Kobe back-to-back, and that's what made me a Lakers fan and things like that. But I just had a question. From the championships I've seen, from the players I've watched, in the sport I've watched, how much was it Jordan? Because I got older guys always telling me he didn't win until he got a great team and things, and I'm not attesting to that. I want to know from you guys, really, like, how much, what's the percentage was it Jordan? You know what I mean? Like, was it really he carried everybody on his back like that? So I just want to hear from you guys. Thanks.
No, I don't think he carried everybody on his back, and thanks for the call. I mean, he was clearly the alpha dog of that team, and he was a sensational player, and there was nothing he couldn't do. But remember, Chris, they couldn't win anything until Scottie Pippen joined that team. So, no, I mean, Horace Grant was on the first incarnation, then you had Dennis Rodman. So, I mean, without Michael, you would have done nothing. But I can't say that Michael Jordan was the only reason they won championships. I don't think that's fair.
No, that's not fair, but he did set the tone for the team.
And he was the best player. I'm not arguing that even a little bit, yeah.
No, he established that mentality that, you know, winning is the most important thing. I don't care about being your friend. I don't care about being liked. I care about winning because that's going to lead to respect. And Jordan was clearly out to be one of the greatest to ever do it, and he accomplished his goal. So, I mean, how often does a player set out to be the best at whatever he does and then ultimately end up doing it? Like, I guess that's kind of when we start looking at Jordan. Like, this is a guy that, you know, when he was at Carolina, everybody thought he was a good player, but nobody had any idea that he was capable of doing what he did once he got to the Bulls. So, I mean, the fact that you saw that growth in his game and you saw the swagger and the confidence, I think that's what attracted so many fans to Jordan. And then once he got to the biggest stage the game had to offer, he had some of his most iconic performances. So I think that's really the thing that separates Jordan from everybody else, Dave.
Yeah, he had this. Go ahead, Rick.
No, and he's got the iconic moments too. I mean, that stay with you forever, right? I mean,
he's got everything.
Go back into your. He does have.
There's nothing he doesn't have. I mean, he's a good-looking guy, right? He was a great player. He had an insatiable desire to win. He could do things that no one else could do, or he could just go, you know, sleepless for nights and still put 45 in your grill. He was a great defensive player. He says he doesn't think he's going to come across great in this documentary because he has this insatiable desire to win. But when I honestly, Rick, is there anything that when you ever watched him that he was incapable of doing?
No, there wasn't. No, there absolutely wasn't. And I mean, Chris said it best. I mean, he set the standard, and it's a team sport. Let's not forget that. I mean, you talk about, you know, these great teams. It's not just about one player. As great as Kobe was, it was Kobe and Shaq, and then it was Kobe and, you know, Paul Gasol. It takes more than one person in a team sport to win a championship. I think what you'll see is, and, you know, Chris and I always talk about this, is, you know, a lot of the time your best leaders aren't your best players. Like, that's very rare to have your best player be, you know, be the voice in the locker and be the tone setter, be the leader. But I think that's why Michael Jordan in his mind won't come off great, is because in order to be a great leader, you're not concerned about being everyone else's friend. Like, if you need to, like, if you don't feel like Steve Kerr's playing great defense and he could be a liability in your chances to win a championship, then you're going to punch him in the face. And that's exactly what he did. No, but that's exactly what he did. Like, the greatest leaders that I've ever met garnered the most respect, but weren't concerned about hurting your feelings. They knew that you respected them enough that they could hold you accountable. They may not like it, but you may not like it, but they were going to do it. If you chose to be, you know, all up in your feelings and, you know, now all of a sudden you don't want to be my friend, I could care less. I'm not about being your friend. I'm about winning games and winning championships. And
I think it's almost like what a good parent does, right? Like, I'm not interested in being your pal. I mean, I'd like to be. That would be ideal, but that's not my number one priority. My number one priority is turning you into a good person and being your parent. And it feels like it was similar to what he did. My number one and sole priority is to go out there and win. So if it means that my teammates don't love me, okay. If it means that I'm not portrayed great in a documentary 20 plus years later, then so be it. But I am going to win championships.
And that's why I disagree with what Jordan said in terms of him coming off in a negative light based on this docuseries, because I don't think it'll be that. Dave, I think we live in an era where authenticity and being unapologetically you is the ultimate currency. And I think a lot of people will see that with Jordan because his priority was basketball above all else. I mean, it's one of those things where you say it might be a little unhealthy, but to him, that was the most important thing. And he wasn't willing to compromise. So when you have somebody that's that committed, that's that dedicated to one thing, and then you actually see them break through and accomplish their goal, I mean, that's the thing that's special. I mean, very few athletes have an opportunity to even come close to experiencing anything like that. To set out to be the best at what you do, and then after you get done playing, that's what everybody considers you? You're at the top of the pyramid when it comes to your respective sport, your respective craft?
That's where he is.
I mean, how many people can say that?
I mean, Brady, Gretzky, not a lot. Not a lot.
No, but it's the ultimate sign of respect. You know, like even listening to what Shaq said, I mean, Shaq's one of the most dominant NBA players that we've ever seen. And he was like, you know, when I first met Michael Jordan, when I first, you know, got a chance to play against Michael Jordan, he's like, it was like playing against the God. Like I had built him up so much in my mind that it was like, you know, I'm playing against, you know, someone that's not human. I mean, that's what Michael Jordan became, man. He was more than just a basketball player.
He really, let's take a listen to it.
And he still is.
Which is amazing to me because nobody is larger than life after they retire 20 years. They're just not. And he is.
Well, because he left behind the brand, man. I mean, Canty's the same as me. I mean, the second a new Jordan sneaker comes out, I'm trying to buy it. I mean, I waited in line for 2 hours to get Allen Hahn a pair of Jordan.
Sidebar, Rico, what's your favorite Jordan?
Oh, man, don't put me in that situation.
I got to, man. I got to ask, man. What's the favorite? You brought it up.
Oh, God. I don't even know, dude. I have my whole closet. I mean, you name it. It just depends on what color I'm wearing. God.
For me, it's the Jordan 11. The Jordan 11, the patent leather joints. That was, when they came out with those, I was in middle school. That was the wave, man. You know the ones I'm talking about? The white with the black patent leather at the bottom?
I know exactly what you're talking about, dude. I remember how pumped I was. I kept asking my parents. I'm like, Mom, Dad, please. All I want is Jordans. And I finally got my first pair of Jordans. And I mean, just all of a sudden putting them on your feet, like just the pep in you. Like I was just strutting around. I was in, what was it, third or fourth grade, just strutting around the classroom. Look at these.
This is
God forbid anybody step on them, Rick. God forbid.
No, you can't do it. No. It's a fight.
We're on site.
I actually made my parents give me, like I said, Mom, listen, I'm going to wear them to school, but there's no chance I'm wearing these out to recess. So I would take off the Jordans before recess and put some other sneakers on just so no one would mess up my Jordans.
You know what? You guys are bringing me back to this awful moment when I was a kid. My parents, and you'll make fun of me and that's fine, and I don't even understand why to this day, demanded that I wear shoes, like not dress shoes, but shoes at least one day a week.
And now you wear sneakers every single day.
I don't put on shoes unless I absolutely have to. Yes, sneakers every single day. It was something about like the arches of your feet are going to not be appropriate if you wear sneakers every day. They made me wear shoes one day a week. I mean, it's cruel.
Yeah, that's not very nice.
It's not very nice.
No, they wanted you to look presentable, you know, make sure you don't have any flat foot issues.
I guess. I don't know. I'll tell you, this whole thing is going to be too much for me. This whole Jordan love affair, how great he was.
You're going to be fine, Dave.
I guarantee you, I'm not the only person that is sitting here excited / dreading what we're going to witness over the next 5 weeks. Especially here in New York, guys, I guarantee it.
But Dave, doesn't a small part of you feel excited that, you know, you're going to have some kind of emotion behind watching something sports related? I mean, how long has it been since you've had something like that?
It's the worst emotion that I ever have. No, I didn't drink Gatorade for years. I wouldn't wear Hanes underwear. I detested Michael Jordan. I detested him.
I get it, Dave. Maybe it's not a great emotion, but I'm just saying, at least you get to feel something because of sports. It's been over a month since we've been in this quarantine and shelter in place. Like, think about that. We'll actually have something that we can watch that's sports related that's going to have us have some kind of reaction, some type of emotion. I'm looking forward to that.
That I will have emotion from watching sports, I would agree. I would absolutely agree. By the way, I don't know if you guys have seen it yet, the HBO documentary, The Scheme, have you seen that?
I haven't.
Excellent. You know about it, right? It's Christian Dawkins, the kid like 3 years ago that was wiretapped by the FBI and it brought down Patino and should have with Sean Miller and Will Wade at LSU. I'm giving it 5 stars. It is excellent. Have you seen it, Rick? Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Excellent. Have you heard about it? It came out like, I think, last week. Excellent. HBO shows are great. Those documentaries, outstanding. Outstanding.
Yeah, I'm finding myself that I'm more and more drawn to documentaries, to like, you know, stuff that's actually really happened.
Yeah. And if you ever need suggestions through the serial killer view of that, I have lots of them.
Guys, what kind of review do you think? What kind of review you think Gordon Damer is going to give the Last Dance docuseries?
It's going to be the complete opposite of what 99% of the people think about it.
Okay.
Well, every review I've read of people that have seen it already say it is absolutely unbelievable. So I would think that Gordon would say it's trite and bland and drones on and on and on.
Right? Poorly done.
Yeah.
Not great character development.
Horrible editing, bad sound quality. He will, if there's anyone that can find reasons why it's not going to be well done, it would be Gordon Damer.
This tarnishes Jordan's legacy.
Yeah. He's not the same guy that I thought he was. Unlikable would be an understatement. Yes. This, I'm sure Gordon will have many negative things to say. By the way, Gordon Damer can be heard every night right now with Larry Hardesty, 10 o'clock, and his uplifting views on life and sports. Bring him in. He is Jordan Renan. We've been pubbing you all morning coming on at 11 o'clock, and we appreciate a couple minutes as always. We're 1 week out from the NFL draft, Jordan, and we have a lot of questions. Let me start with the Giants' fourth overall selection.
Yep.
Are you of the mindset that the Giants, quickly, we don't need a whole long answer because I don't want to follow up on it, quickly, that the Giants will go offensive line four overall?
If they can move out, yes, I do. I still think they would go offensive lineman four overall.
Okay, so here's my question then. Not the way you have them ranked, the way you believe the Giants have the top, I guess we'll say the top four guys ranked, the way you believe right now, a week out from the draft, the Giants would have the top four offensive linemen ranked on their board.
Tristan Wirfs, Jedrick Wills, Andrew Thomas, Mekhi Becton. Even though I know we did a piece the other day and we spoke to people around the league and Becton came in atop the voting, I just think for the Giants and their purposes, start a guy on the right, eventually move him over to the left, minimize risk. I believe that's the way that it might look. Look, we're all guesstimating, right? I mean, nobody really knows. Nobody's telling anybody their entire draft board. So, but that's my opinion. I'm following the clues and the buzz that you hear from people around the league and from beginning at the combine through now.
Yeah, Jordan, I thought one of the interesting things in the article with you and Rich Samini, breaking down the tackle position, that I thought was really interesting, especially if you consider, how the draft is going to work this year, is the relationship between Joe Judge and Nick Saban, and does that sway Joe Judge into maybe picking Wills with the fourth overall pick instead of Wirfs?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I was speaking to someone who knows that Alabama program pretty well, and the way they were explaining it to me was, look, listen, this is someone he trusts. If that person is going to, he obviously can get more information from Alabama, right? He's going to talk to people there. And the Giants, heck, they have a running backs coach who was at Alabama last year, right? So he knows Jedrick Wills really well. If all these guys are giving their stamp of approval on this guy, that information has to play into the equation. I mean, it's hard to completely ignore that that's going to be a factor. So, And everything that Joe Judge has done so far and the Giants since he took over has had a feeling of familiarity, right? There's always been – they signed Blake Martinez. He had a connection to Patrick Graham, right? Bradbury, he had a connection to Gettleman. Everything is on all his entire coaching staff. He even admitted it was very important to him that he had previous relationships and working relationships with these guys, because he wanted to be able to trust them. And I think the same holds true with players.
Jordan, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but I want to ask you about what's going to happen at the top of the draft a week from now. A lot of people in and around football believe that the Los Angeles Chargers are going to draft a quarterback early this year and that they're probably going to try to move into the top five in order to do it. How likely is it that the Giants would be willing to move back a couple of spots if that deal is on the table from the Chargers?
Very. I think that is what the Giants would like to do. They would like to move back. They would like to add more picks. They have a 63-pick gap between their second and third round pick right now. They really only have, inside the top 100, they have three picks. One is 99. So this is a team we know. Look at the roster. There are a lot of holes. Any way they could pick up extra draft picks, plus, like I said, even if they get stuck at four, I think they're probably still going to go lineman. They could fall back, get more picks, and still pick a lineman. So, I mean, obviously that makes a ton of sense for the Giants. I think that would be their preference at this point, trading back, whether, I don't know who it is, whether it's the Chargers, whether it's the Jaguars, maybe it's a surprise team that wants to move up. Anyway, for the Giants to be able to get more picks, but still be in position to draft that offensive tackle, and this is a good offensive tackle draft at the top.
So does that mean
I think they want to do it?
Does that mean that that it would have to be a top 10 pick? Like, you can't see them moving back to the mid-teens, right? Like, we hear rumblings that Atlanta desperately wants to move up. You think the Giants stay within that 6-7-9 range,
they're at
right?
Four. They're at four. Four is a very valuable pick, right? So in order to get down to the teens or whatever, the package would have to include about, you know, like so many picks. It would be ridiculous. So I don't really think that's realistic. There's an upper echelon top tier of players in this draft. Let's say it's about 8-9 guys. I think they would like to stay in that range.
Jordan, what have you heard? I mean, you're dialed in. I mean, you can sniff it out with the best of them. I mean, are there any other teams that you've heard that could potentially move up for a quarterback that no one's really talking about?
I actually, the more I listen, the more I hear, I don't think this is the draft where teams are going to be flying up the board for the quarterback, to be honest with you. I think the risk is still a little too high for Tua at this point. And I don't think Justin Herbert is that kind of guy. I mean, I've spoken to people who don't really like him that much. There's things about his college tape. The accuracy is a question. I mean, I don't know. I think teams will draft those guys high. And by high, I'm meaning top 10. But I don't think there's teams that are saying, we need to get this guy. We're trading all the way up to four to get this guy or three, no matter what. And if they do, if there is that one team, which I think is the most that'll move up to get it, they're going to do it with the three spot, the three pick, not the four pick, right? Why would you negotiate with the four pick? Because then whoever wants that, if you're worried about losing them, someone's going to jump and get him at the three pick because that's the sweet spot.
Jordan, Joe Judge had the conference call with the media yesterday, and I wanted to get your sense on how he's dealing with everything. Obviously, it's an incredibly tough circumstance for a rookie head coach going into his first offseason, you know, his first draft with him being the guy. How is he handling all of this? Do you feel like he's got a good handle on what's going on and on his plan forward?
I do. He's been making contingency plans. I think I told you this last time. Upon contingency plan. And he even said yesterday, he has four calendars, four different color-coded calendars for different scenarios of how everything unfolds. And, you know, this is when they're allowed to do X, and this is when they're allowed to do Y. And he's taking it all in stride. He's not sitting there saying, wow, I'm at a big disadvantage. I mean, really, when you listen to him, and I've spoken to him about this, it's not something... He's saying, look, these are the limitations. This is the situation that exists right now. We're just going to make the best of the situation. Now, he says it's not going to hurt them as much as other teams and, you know, stuff like that. Well, he's saying that. Let's be honest, teams that already have systems in place have a huge advantage. But there's just nothing he could do about that. So he's going to make the best of it right now and move forward. And I think that's what you're seeing. And, what I do think we should look for, and kind of exciting if you're a Giants fan, because this isn't the way the organization has operated for much of forever, is you're going to see him look for interesting, progressive, unique ways to teach and move forward and make the best of this situation. And I think I mentioned it last time, like, just an example. I don't know if they could do this, but the Apple Watches that Nick Saban gave his players to monitor workouts and stuff like that. I think we're going to see stuff like that from Joe Judge and the Giants now, which we never would have seen before, let's be honest.
Yeah, it's a progressive Giants organization now. Jordan Renan with us here, 98.7 ESPN. A lot of rumblings, and I don't know if you concur with this or not, that there's a pretty good chance that the Giants go for a center early on in this draft. Can you envision a way that they go offensive lineman four, like the tackle four, and then the center 36 in this draft?
Absolutely. I do. I do think that's a possibility. But look, they want to improve that defense, right? They would love to get a great pass rusher, right? But there's one in the draft, his name is Chase Young, and they're probably almost certainly going to have no chance to get him. The other one, and I think if they get more picks and they can work their way, Kalevon Chaisson, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing his name right, the guy from LSU, speedy guy. I that's a guy to keep your eye on if they get more picks. But aside from those two guys, there aren't these dynamic edge rushers in the draft. right? So what's the next best thing for the Giants to do? You know, fix that offensive line.
Yep.
If that means an offensive tackle and a center, because they need a center desperately, right? And yesterday in my mock draft, we did 7 rounds with Chris Carlin, and my first round pick was Wirfs. My second round pick was Matt Hennessy from Temple. Now, people are like, oh, Matt Hennessy, way too high for him, way too high for him. People around the league think this is a really good player, a really good old school type center, can move well, power, anchor. So that's the guy I picked in that spot. The top center is Cesar Ruiz from Michigan. I expect him to go off the board. I spoke to people that are really high on him. So I would expect him to kind of go off the board in the first round. So either Matt Hennessy or Lloyd Cushenberry from LSU. Those are kind of the next two guys in line. I think those would be serious, serious options for the Giants at pick number 36. So otherwise, you got to wait till pick 99 at best, right? Unless they start picking up more picks.
Yeah, then maybe you'll end up with Bob Frankenberry at center. Jordan, you mentioned pass rusher, and I mean, Chase Young, clearly, I mean, he could be the best player in this draft. And then there's a drop off. Any thought to this? And I know Gettleman hasn't shown, you know, the willingness to move back, but do you think there's the potential that if you're willing to spend the money that you could swap picks with Jacksonville and get the pass rusher that way? Get Yannick Ngakoue?
You know, here's the tough part. That's going to be costly in regards to draft picks, right? And the Giants aren't giving up number 4 flat out. Unless the Jaguars are so smitten with a quarterback, why would they want to move up to 9? You know, or unless they're so smitten with Simmons, I just don't see that being the case. Forget the financials for a second. There's going to be a team out there probably that offers a first-round pick, but not a top end of the first-round pick, right? Like a mid or probably even late-round first-round pick plus more. So in order for the Giants to do that, you're either giving up, you know, 36 in a future first or something like that, or 36 in a future second and more. It's just going to be very costly that it just seems hard for me to imagine the Giants do it. And that's not even to put into the equation that they like Leonard Williams. They don't want to get rid of Leonard Williams. And in order to sign Ngakoue, you probably have to do something with Leonard Williams' contract, because that's $16.1 million or $16 million, whatever it is, on the books right now. So there's some serious obstacles. I would be surprised if it happens with the Giants being the team they make that gets it done.
So, Jordan, if they don't make a trade for Yannick Ngakoue, what are the Giants' plans in terms of addressing the edge pass rush position? I mean, it doesn't feel like there's a guy that's going to be there for them if they're going to pick at the top of the second round and go that direction. So, I mean, are they going to try to add to that group, or are they comfortable going into the season with Kyler Fackrell and Lorenzo Carter and O'Shane Zimenez?
Yeah, I think the plan would be to just throw some more bodies into the mix and try to get the most out of it. You know, a veteran type guy. I think at the beginning of free agency, one of the guys I named was like Cam Wake, right? An older veteran guy to add to the mix later on. Get another guy in the middle rounds of the draft, third, fourth round kind of guy. Throw him into the mix. So sort of like another O'Shane Zimenez type. And really, they, you know, at this point, if they're not going to, this is a multi-year project. We've talked about this before. They're not going to be able to fill all the gaps. So throw these guys out there, put all, you know, strength in numbers, try and get the most out of each one, and see maybe if one of these guys can pan out, right? The Zimenez, or if you draft another third or fourth round guy, or Lorenzo Carter with the new coaching, maybe can blossom. I think that seems to be the plan, and just have Fackrell and another veteran add him to the mix and sort of get by that way for the time being, knowing full well that you'll have to address that moving forward in the future. But the way it worked out, it's just not ideal. It hasn't been ideal for them in regards to getting that number one pass rusher this offseason. If they had lost to the Redskins, you know, that might be a different story right now.
Stop it. We're not having that conversation.
But let's be honest, that is the case. There's really – this isn't a great pass rusher draft. That's the dilemma. That's the biggest dilemma here.
Jordan non-Jordan is in the show. Jordan, from what you're hearing, any validity to these Odell Beckham Jr. rumor trade rumors?
I haven't heard anything that says that that's real, to be honest with you. So I haven't been looking that hard into them, but there's nothing so far that says, okay, this is going to happen. From what I was told, I mean, I spoke to people probably about like a month or so ago, was the Cleveland Browns had every intention of bringing Odell Beckham Jr. back this season. Now, they didn't say it completely won't happen, that it was impossible that something would come along and would really attract their interest, but they're moving forward right now with plans of having him as part of the equation, as far as I'm aware. So I would be I don't think that makes a ton of sense, because the Vikings would have first of all, we know Odell wouldn't love going to Minnesota, right? So you'd have to have a real and with Mike Zimmer, that
I don't know about that. So,
I mean, if I had to pick any of the 32 coaches that I probably would say I wouldn't want him to go to, I think Mike Zimmer might be number one.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I would agree with that. 100%.
And he's not going to want to go to, wouldn't want to go to Minnesota. It'd be nothing but trouble for them to have the money issue in Minnesota. Just a lot of things don't add up to me in that.
Jordan, one of the under the radar moves the Giants made this offseason was signing Colt McCoy to be the backup. Are you aware of any communications between Colt and Daniel Jones, and is there anything going on right there right now?
Yeah, we spoke to Colt McCoy probably a week or two ago at this point, and he had already said that he had talked to Daniel Jones and reached out to him and spoke to him on a couple of occasions. And that was before they even got the playbook. Okay? So they got the playbook recently. Colt McCoy is probably talking to Daniel Jones at this point regularly. Everything you hear about the guy is he's top-notch. Top-notch human, top-notch professional. And the fact that he had talked to him twice already, like within the first week or two that he was signed by the Giants, to me said a lot about that relationship that he's trying to build there and the support system he knows he's there to provide Daniel Jones. Because Colt McCoy knows, he's not coming here as a starting quarterback. He's coming here as the veteran, sort of mentor kind of guy that's to work and behind Daniel Jones and to help him out and to learn from and be ready in case they need him. So I think at this point they've had their playbook for, 10 days or so. I'm sure there's a lot of back and forth between the two of them, with Colt McCoy basically serving as the extension of the coaching staff.
Hey, Jordan, let me ask you this. So, you know, obviously if OTAs were, you know, as they usually are, I mean, because Joe Judge is new, you'd have that extra week. Have you heard anything as far as, you know, what the NFL and what the Players Association is going to do as far as maybe relaxing some of those rules as far as how much, you know, Daniel Jones can be in contact with Jason Garrett and the coaching staff?
Yeah, look, these are things that were collectively bargained, and this has been a big, and Chris could probably talk about this more than me, but like this has been a big push for the players union for a long time to make sure in the off season that players aren't overworked and that this is all voluntary and that coaches can't push them. And it's a very fine line they have to walk here. And they're going to be very careful not to allow coaches too much freedom, because the second you allow, you open the window a crack, right? What are they going to do?
Yep.
They're going to take it and they're going to yank it open and they're going to jump through and they're going to take every second and abuse it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I really don't think you're going to see that. There are going to be limitations. There's going to be restrictions in regards to the amount of time, and they're not going to really open it up and allow for, let's be honest, Tom Coughlin just completely didn't care about the rules and just went about his business, right, in that regard. and that's a concern that they have. Like, the second you offer that to the team and the coach, that they're going to take advantage of that.
Well, Jordan, as always, we appreciate it. We're 1 week away. I'm sure we'll talk to you next week prior to the draft, but strap in, buddy, because this is it's going to be the first real sports we've had in quite a long time, and we appreciate it as always.
Yeah, definitely keep us, distracted and a little diversion from reality. So wait, let me hear real quick. Which of you guys, if you guys are given the choice, do you go Simmons or you go offensive tackle?
If we're given the choice, I think we all tackle. Would go offensive line. Yeah.
Really? Over Simmons? Okay.
Yes.
Yep. Okay, I mean, Jordan.
I'm with you. I just don't.
Jordan.
The more I think Jordan, about it, the more I'm not sure a player at that position is really the true impact premier, you know, player in the NFL filling those spots. Positional value, I think, would
hold
prevent
on.
Me from
Jordan.
Going in that direction.
Yeah, but Jordan, here's the other thing, though. Take into account, I mean, Isaiah Simmons is a freakish athlete and, you know, positionless football and everything else. But the reality is that you got a quarterback in his second year, and more importantly, you're going to have to pay Saquon Barkley $17 million a year after this season.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to get $17 million worth of production.
Yeah, I see. Look, I think solidify. That's why I picked two offensive linemen. I just think that's the way the Giants are going to think at this point. Solidifying that line and protecting those investments. That's what it's all about.
Hey, yeah. Jordan, before you go, let me ask you a question. I want a hair update. Like, how was your hair? And secondly, with the Saquon Barkley thing.
What did you do to yourself, Jordan? I saw you butchered your hair.
He flobied himself.
Why?
I told my wife, I said, here, we're going to take the clips. We're going to shave, you know, go with, like, to the middle of the side of my head. And she went zoop all the way up to the top.
Ugh.
So there was no chance for any sort of fade. There was no chance for any sort of blend in. So next thing I know, my hair is like at a two all the way up until the top of my head. And so the next thing I know, I look like a ridiculous tennis ball. I mean, it's horrible. It's awful. I'm still wearing a hood and a hat. This is 6 days later. It's awful.
All right. So Jordan, here's my question. So your hair's a mess. It'll grow back, hopefully for you. Here's the question, though. So say, I mean, again, who knows what happens, but let's just say for the sake of my question, Giants don't have a very good season. They don't win a lot of football games. Dave Gettleman gets fired. Does that, in your opinion, at all change their approach with if they pay Saquon Barkley, you think?
I think they're too far along. They're too far in. That's just not a move that they're going to be able to make. At that point, because then you're going to be taking a step backwards and saying we're still a few more years away from competing. We're taking away one of our best players. You know, because you just alienate Saquon and then be like, oh, we're just not going to pay you and drag you along here. Like, that just would be a bad situation. So your options are basically going to be he's going to want to get paid, right, naturally, if you're a running back, if you get paid as soon as humanly possible. Otherwise, you're putting everything at risk. So it's either move forward with Saquon or move on from Saquon. And this is a mistake that you know, the drafting of Saquon when they weren't ready for him, it's just something that you continue have to go down the road with it. And you can't punt at this point. I mean, they're not in a position to do that right now.
No, they're certainly not as we enter year three of Saquon Barkley with the Giants. All right, Jordan, we got to go. Good luck with the hair. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
You got it, guys. All right.
That, of course, Jordan Renaud. Let's take a quick break. Come back. Get to the call. Why are you laughing?
Good luck with the hair. We'll talk to you later.
Did you see what he did?
Yes.
I mean,
it wasn't him, Dave.
Yeah, but it's an extension of him. It's his wife. If my wife butchered my hair like that, I probably wouldn't talk to her for a couple of days.
Well, I mean, it's either that or it's not have a haircut at all. Doesn't sound like there's a lot of great options, Dave.
I have not. Have you gotten a haircut?
No, right. I haven't.
Chris,
but I'm also not on television.
Yeah, but I mean, I think at this stage you can wear a hood or you can wear a hat or something. No,
I don't think you can if you're going to be on national television.
No,
no.
Yeah, I guess he was.
Ray Santiago is behind the glass shaking his head. No, so I don't think you can do that.
Yeah, but his hair's not that bad. Like, I mean, it's not that out of control. You know, like him not having a haircut probably be better than what he has now.
Him not having yes, I would agree with that. It would just be it'd be a lot of hair, which is fine.
Okay.
Yeah, which is all fine.
Right. Okay,
which
guys.
Which would distract you from, I mean, what the bigger problem is.
I'm not gonna allow you to do this. I'm not gonna allow you to just defame Jordan Renaud. It's uncalled for. I mean, we have a pandemic going on, for God's sakes.
it's like if you know those like stone statues with the faces.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's what it reminds me of, like with the big giant, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yep.
Yeah, the Easter Island statues.
You really
Y'all ain't right, man.
You really
ain't
right. You really do have some issues.
Hot take me, please.
Yeah, I'm going to hot take you. Now, I want this like an exclaimer, right? Like a disclaimer at the start of this. I do not believe this will happen. This is what I think should happen. Okay? That being said, you each get your five questions. The floor is yours.
I'll go first. Is this?
I will tell you also that this is an NFL hot take.
Does this have to do with any of the teams in the top five of this year's NFL draft trading back?
No.
Mm-mm. No. Well,
no.
Is it Odell Beckham getting traded to the Minnesota Vikings?
No.
Does this take have to do with the NFL draft?
No.
Wow. I mean, you feel like you teased something with the draft yesterday as far as your hot take is concerned. Now you've completely pulled a 180 on me.
Well, I mean.
Does this take have something to do with a team in the NFC?
Yes.
Does this have to do with a team in the NFC drafting a quarterback?
No.
No.
Does it have to do with the quarterback in the NFC currently?
No.
NFC team. Doesn't have to do with trading back. Doesn't have to do with drafting a quarterback.
Nope.
I really have no idea.
No idea.
You got more questions now, don't we?
Yeah, you have more questions. Go ahead.
All right.
I thought it had something to do with the Redskins trading back, but apparently that's obviously not it.
Mm-mm. You wanted it to be that, but you yelled at me not to make it that.
Not to make it that. That's
correct. Like, I don't want to hear you with these pipe dreams of the Redskins trading back and the Giants winding up with Chase Young. No, it doesn't involve that.
And this has nothing to do with the quarterback.
Mm-mm.
Does it have to do with the coach?
Nope.
Does this have to do with the NFL schedule?
No.
I have no idea. I'm out of questions. I have no idea. I have no idea.
Just a full white flag, you give up.
White flag tied to a stick. I'm up.
All right. I'm going to give you one hint of the team, and then maybe you can have some traction from that. This has to do with the New York Football Giants.
No, of course it does.
I went with the Rangers the other day. You yelled at me that. I mean, that's you're unhappy with whatever my hot take is. You don't even know what the hot take is yet.
No, it doesn't have it doesn't have anything to do with trading back.
Mm-mm.
But it has to do with the Giants.
Does it have to do with the Giants' win total this year?
Nope. It has to do with a very popular player on the Giants.
The Giants should trade Saquon Barkley.
Yes.
That's spicy.
That is spicy.
You're going to get hate tweets for that.
That's fine.
Tweets for that.
You won how many games with him in 2 years? You're going to have to pay him $17 million a year, probably after this season.
Mm-hmm.
Your win total is 5.5 right now. You're nowhere near winning anything. There's no doubt in my mind that he could be better, be better used on a team that's closer to winning. I mean, honestly, right now, if you said you have to bet everything you have, whether you're going to win a Super Bowl with Saquon Barkley as your running back, I'd say probably not. I think it would make sense for the Giants to turn around and trade Saquon Barkley if they could get fair value in return for him.
And that's exactly what I was going to ask you, Dave. What would be fair value in your opinion?
You know, I'm at the point where if I could get, and I know they won't do it, so I know this is a moot conversation.
Sure, yeah.
If I could get a top 20 pick, I think I would really consider doing it.
So what you do is you pick up the phone, you call Tampa and say, hey, listen, we'll give you Nate Solder and Saquon Barkley for the 14th overall pick.
I think they tell you to keep Nate Solder.
If I could get him at 14. If I could get
him and Tom are friends.
Yeah. Yeah. If I could get 14 for Barkley, I would do it.
Wow.
You think I'm crazy or you think it's a hot take?
No, I think it's a hot take. I actually think it's diabolical in a brilliant way. I mean, we know it will never happen because a part of why Dave Gettleman still has the job is that he drafted Saquon and he's been such a productive player. But I just, you know, Dave, it makes a lot of sense. You're not going to get the return on investment if you pay Saquon $17 million a year on a contract extension. So it makes sense to get something for that where you can continue to build around Daniel Jones.
I think you got to wait, though. I understand where you're coming from, but I think you have to wait. I think you have to give it – I mean, you have to give it this season to see what happens.
But like, I understand that, but here's the thing. He has more value now because he's so reasonable. So are you able to get
– But you're still going to have to pay it. But they realize that even if they trade for him now, he'll play one season and then they'll have to pay him.
Right, but if you trade him after the team, next year –
Yeah, I'm with Dave on this one. I think the team will think it's more valuable to have him this year and then work out the contract with him as opposed to the Giants doing what they did with Odell Beckham, signing him to an extension and then trying to move him on that deal.
No, I don't disagree with you, but also what you need to take into account is that Dave Gettleman is on the hot seat. So he's trying to win as many games as possible.
Oh, it's not going to happen.
Saquon Barkley's your best offensive player.
No, this is not going to happen. There's a better chance that the Giants allow me to make the fourth overall selection than this actually happens.
But here's the other thing. Here's the other thing, though, too, to take into account. And who knows if this ever happens. I mean, it doesn't feel like it's going to happen. But, I mean, realistically, I mean, if you were just hell-bent on being, you know, a team, an organization that has no interest in, you know, having real strong relationships with your players, I mean, having a running back drafted in the first round, having control for 5 years – with that fifth-year option, and then just going franchise, and getting the 7 best years. I mean, that's not a terrible philosophy. Bad for the player, not terrible for the team.
Yeah, it would be really bad.
But it just depends on where you are with your program, though. If you're at a point where you can actually, you know, compete for something, then it makes sense to take a running back in the first round and have him at that controllable pay scale. But if you're a team like the Giants that was rebuilding, you had a 3-13 year. Didn't make sense to use the number 2 overall pick on a running back, but they did it.
No,
that will forever go down as a horrendous selection. Not him as the player, but taking a running back at 2 overall.
Yeah, it wasn't a smart pick.
No, wasn't
great
smart.
Player.
Do you love
smart.
It? I think you love it.
I think it's good. You threw me for a loop. I could have sworn yesterday I knew it, and then all of a sudden today just completely flummoxed.
Yeah, this is what we do.
Do you need to feel better about your life?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
Let's take a look at Rick's Knobservation.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
All right, here we go, fellas. This Thursday afternoon, some good news to start off Knobservations. Bon Jovi apparently will be releasing a new song addressing the coronavirus crisis. So you got that to look forward to. It's being reported by Variety. have you guys actually looked at, I know you guys are all familiar with what's going on with the All-In Challenge. Have you been on the website and looked at some of the experiences available in the All-In Challenge?
The one I know Eli's giving his, or selling, right, I guess, for charity.
No, he's giving it.
He's
giving it.
He's giving it away. You have to buy it then, no?
No, you don't buy it. How it works is it's not like the highest bid. So you go in and you can get, you know, 10 chances for $10 or 25 for $25 or, you know, 100 for $50. And then
it's a raffle?
You enter to win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, okay, so you said that one.
The Peyton Manning one sounds like it'd be really, really cool.
Yeah, you got golf and dinner with Peyton Manning in your hometown. You got, I mean, Mark Cuban said that you can have a one-day contract to play with the Mavs. You can go to a Texas football game with Matthew McConaughey. You can be in Kevin Hart's next movie. You can have a walk-on role in a Scorsese film with DiCaprio and De Niro. Justin Bieber will sing One Less Lonely Girl at Your House. Tampa Bay.
So when you buy your tickets, you buy it for the specific event that you want or the specific win that you want?
Yeah. Go on. So do yourself, I mean, because it's worth it. I mean, first of all the money, all the proceeds go to charity, which is amazing. But yeah, I mean, you can go on and put, you know, $10 for 10 opportunities for, you know, a handful of different things, whatever you like the most.
I like it.
Here's one. This is the one that I think you would, if I'm going to do this, which I'm definitely going to do this, I'm sitting here going through some of the stuff that I would do, and here's the two I would go for you. Giants game, dinner at Rayo's, and a workout with Saquon Barkley. Your kids would go crazy for that.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Eli.
That's all-encompassing in one?
In one. And here's the best one for Dave. coin toss at a New York Giants game and dinner with Eli Manning.
That's
you
it.
You would love that.
That would be it.
How great would that be?
Oh, you'd be insane. You would love that.
So I would call heads or tails for the Giants.
Yeah, and then go have dinner with Eli.
Trust me, Dave, I've lived that experience. It is awesome.
That sounds terrific. I would love to do that.
You couldn't screw it up, though. You have to make sure you listen. I think
I would go tails. You know what would be great?
And if you lost, you'd have to say, or if you won, you have to say, defer. I'm going to defer.
Yeah, I don't want to mess up like we've seen happen in the past.
No confusion.
I'm telling you, to be, now obviously you couldn't do it this year, to be in the draft room. To be in the Giants draft room, to me, would be the greatest thing ever.
Well, here's what you do. You want to get in the draft room, here's what you do, Dave. This is a little bit diabolical, but you're capable of doing this. What you do is that you find out where Dave Gettleman lives, and then you pretend you're delivering him a pizza. And then you just, all of a sudden, when he opens the door, you come bombing in. You
want to be bombing in?
Come bombing in. What right are you
after
doing,
the,
Dave?
Right after the lines are off the clock?
Yes.
Pizza.
Who are we taking it for?
Yeah. Oh, that would be sensational. I'm going to check this out. So it's all in. Is there? I'll find it. Go ahead.
We'll just go all in challenge.
I'll find it.
All in challenge. Yeah, that's awesome.
I'll find it.
Here we go. Did this happen in Florida?
Well, I have one more nice one, by the way, if I can quickly sneak it in. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Michael Che from Saturday Night Live. I didn't know the story. His grandmother passed away from COVID. Did you see what he did?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
So she lived in a building. He is paying rent for 160 of the apartments in that building for 1 month. The rent.
That's awesome.
1 month.
Awesome.
How great is that?
No, man, I mean, if you want to, and I'm glad we're doing these positive stories, but just the amount of people stepping up, I mean, in doing their part and whatever they can do has been awesome.
Yeah, it's been a lot of it.
Makes you feel good.
It does.
And here's what doesn't make you feel good, or does it happen in Florida? Did this happen in Florida? A judge has urged attorneys to make sure they get out of bed and put some clothes on before they appear in hearings via video conference after one of the lawyers decided to sign on while still in bed under the covers.
On a video
conference? Complete disrespect.
Under the covers?
Under the covers. We've also seen many lawyers in casual shirts, blouses, no concern for ill grooming, in bedrooms with the master bed in the background, etc. One male lawyer appeared shirtless, and one female attorney was still in bed under the covers.
So she brought the computer under the covers?
Yeah. Here's one of my favorite quotes. Putting on a beach cover-up won't cover up the fact that you're poolside in a bathing suit, so please, if you don't mind, let's treat court hearings as court hearings.
It's unbelievable. Could you?
I don't want that to be my lawyer. No way.
No, not at all.
No way.
So where are you exactly? I'm under the covers.
One lawyer shirtless. What do you think? You have the camera turned off? Good thing they can't see me.
That's terrific.
Hey, dummy.
The question is that Florida?
Is that Florida? Yeah, was that a Florida judge? Or was that somewhere else?
It does sound like Florida.
Did you throw in, like, is that a real thing, or did you just throw in the cover, the bikini cover?
That's a real thing.
That's a real thing? I'm going to say Florida then.
Yeah. Florida. I'm going to go Florida as well.
This is why I love you guys. Santiago, Florida?
I think this is another case of like stuff expanding past Florida, so I'll say not Florida.
Yeah, you're wrong. Canty and David are right. And what I love about Canty is that the level of attention to detail you guys have now is through the roof. I can't get anything by you.
Well, because you bring a very strong did it happen in Florida game, and we're going to raise the level of our game as well.
Well, nowadays you just can't tell, Dave. Like, you have to be detail-oriented because it seems like the entire country is turned into Florida.
We're like the Joe Judge of did it happen in Florida here. No detail is left undone.
All right, here's another one. Did this happen in Florida? Police department on Tuesday told residents that they needed to remember to put on some pants before they make their short trip to the mailbox. Please remember to put on your pants before leaving the house to check your mailbox. You know who you are. This is your final warning.
Now, I imagine shorts is not included in that because
I
go
just
out to
pants. This is no pants. This is just
like you have nothing on. You're not even
no
like gitch. Boxers. Nothing.
No pants. No.
Oh my God.
The savagery, right, Dave? Who does that?
Who would walk out to the mailbox with no pants on?
Things are weird, Dave.
Yes, they just got to be free.
That's
Dave, I mean, you're talking about. I did a story where people thought they could just go rob places because there would be no one around. Just get away with these robberies because there's no one around.
Thought you guys were sheltering in place too.
Yeah. You imagine walking out to the mailbox with no pants. Your wife's like, "Where are you going? Just get the mail.
Just check
the pants
mailbox.
On." Ass.
Yeah, that's all right. No one's paying attention.
That could be Florida, but mailboxes. I'm gonna say not Florida.
Wow, Canty, Florida.
I'm with Dave on this one. People free ball everywhere.
That's a good point. I haven't worn underwear in quite some time. Santiago, Florida.
Not Florida. Not Florida.
That was Maryland.
Maryland.
That was Maryland.
Things are getting weird in the DMV.
I mean, this is hitting close to home, these stories now.
I may walk up to my mailbox naked just to get in.
I don't think you'll do it.
Did it happen in Florida? I'll do it. I would do anything for a good story. I will do it right now. Would you like me to? If we had time, I would leave now, run to the mailbox.
I think your wife would be incensed if you walked to the mailbox naked.
No, she wouldn't care. I might
incensed.
I can do it. I'll do it during the next break.
Yeah, we'll see a small article in the Post tomorrow about Long Island Man walking to his
mailbox.
It will
not be a small. How dare you? It'll be a two-page story.
Yeah, three-page layout.
Huge.
Yes, we
it'll
know.
Be a pullout. Yeah. They'll have to add a pullout for that.
I'll stop. You know you don't need a pullout.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. A female with a mustache walked the mailbox. No, that was it's actually me.
A hairy lipped woman.
Oh man, all right, before we go, just one more because Dave wants it. Jay Glazer talking about
breaking
news. I mean, Dave, please. That was awful.
I mean, I think, you know, Beckham could be traded or they're going to say there's no fans allowed in the games for the 2020 season. I mean, that's his big tease is that a player on the Rams has contracted COVID-19. I was shocked by that.
Underwhelmed, to say the very least.
I think Jay Glazer is terrific, and I was very disappointed in that from him.
Yeah, and I thought there was a natural opportunity for him to talk about the NFL season potentially being shortened because the NFL has leaked it out that they're exploring those options as well, if it's necessary. Like, I thought it was going to be something along those lines. But to have an offensive lineman from the Rams, a guy who tested positive for it a month ago,
right?
That you're going to leak that announcement yesterday as your big news?
We got to tease it for 24 hours?
Yeah, I don't get that.
That was a terrible job by him.
Brutal.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.